she comes back. But if there's no way of moving back, well, when your face falls apart, have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock. And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go into the field to investigate. I am your host, Vance Pollock, in the studio with investigator Shelley Wright. How are you, Shelley?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing great. And producer Sam, the animal steel. Sam.
Yes.
Are you with me?
I am with you in body, if not mind.
Yeah, it's one of those. The kiddos are back in school, and this past week has turned our summer break upside down. Those of us who are parents, things are changing a little bit. Some of us are kind of had coordinated getting off to work in the morning. Now we have to incorporate getting the kids on the bus or dropped off at school. So, yeah, it stretches the day out, maybe another hour or so.
It changes for people who don't have kids either, because we get stuck behind those school buses. And
you have to follow the school buses, yeah. Well, I've often noticed that since we started our run, the beginning of this year, that we have this running narrative, these sort of concepts, recurrent ideas, and a lot of it... I want to be skeptic enough to honestly say, okay, Vance, you're reading too much into this. You're seeing synchronicity everywhere. You're cloud gazing. You're seeing, unicorns prancing in the sky. But, I've run across a couple instances here in print. One of these, Sam, you'll recognize this book. We'll get into this a little bit.
I do recognize that
book. You picked up this book, a collection of Southern tales of the supernatural called The Dark 30. It's spelled out for those who want to look up a copy of it. Apparently it was a Newbery Award winner some years ago, so most of your local libraries should have a copy. You'd probably be able to pick up a copy pretty cheap. Great stories, fascinating illustrations. The Dark 30, not cardinal number 30, but spelled out Dark 30, T-H-I-R-T-Y, for those of who are spelling impaired. The Dark 30, Southern Tales of the Supernatural by Patricia C. McKissick. And I ran across, as I was just browsing this the other night at bedtime, ran across a couple of paragraphs right at the opening of a chapter that I thought were significant for a number of reasons. Maybe I ought to just read those paragraphs and then break it down and see if you people think I'm just cloud gazing, or if there is something, if we're churning up some ghosts here in the studio week in, week out. Justice is the title of this chapter. Picks up on page 22 of this edition. The Ku Klux Klan is the most well-known white supremacist organization in the country. Since its earliest beginnings, the Klan has used racial and religious intolerance to terrorize people in their homes, churches, and synagogues, schools, and businesses, until recent years, with impunity. To the Klan, anybody who is different is automatically inferior. One of the most powerful periods for the KKK was the 1930s. Klansmen draped in white robes and hoods meted out horrific punishments for so-called crimes that sometimes amounted to no more than sassing or being uppity. But a 19th century poet and editor, William Cullen Bryant, gave a warning to all those who would make a mockery of justice. Quote, "Truth crushed to earth will rise again. You can count on it." Riley Holt, the richest and most powerful man in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi, was attacked and left for dead along State Highway 49. The whole state prayed for Holt's recovery, but he died several days later, never regaining consciousness. The gist of Justice, I'll break off with a reading there. The gist of this chapter, Justice, is that a man was accused of the murder and lynched, even though he proclaimed to the end of the rope his innocence, but said that he would come back and prove that he was innocent. And so that was kind of fascinating. There's a few elements that regular listeners to Speaking of Strange are going to recognize there. We mentioned trying to puzzle out the identity of a Klan funeral, a KKK funeral, photographs that were taken here in Asheville back in the 1920s, and how our friend Uncle Billy Brown helped us locate that grave and the identity of that man. That was long-running piece that I did on the Joshua P. Warren Asheville Mystery Museum Facebook page. If you'll go to the Asheville Mystery Museum Facebook page, I think it's simply facebook.com/mysterymuseum. And if you'll go to the Photos tab and look for photo albums, you'll find one called Intolerant Ghosts, talking about people who went to their graves being adamantly racist and may remain so beyond the grave. I think maybe Sheriff John Lyerly harbors some of those feelings, among others. Then you'll notice the reference to Tallahatchie County, Mississippi, yet again. These ghosts of Mississippi and Tallahatchie in particular keep rearing their head in our research, and we really don't know where we're going with this. It's like we're following a phantom, quite literally, a will-o'-the-wisp. But when suggestions and things keep popping up, just rather at random, this is a book that Sam found in the bins. I like the fact that Sam is responsible for this case of synchronicity, if you will, because you may have heard that Sam, the animal, still likes to dig in the bins.
I do. Guilty as charged.
And you often gift us here in the studio with interesting finds. You know that I like regional history. Of course, the connection to the Dark 30, which is quite a different segment, our third hour here on Speaking of Strange. But Southern Tales of the Supernatural, I mean, you got to see some of these illustrations in here. There's a really cool one just on the page before of a voodoo doll hanging from a tree, like an etching.
Ooh, that's spooky.
It is. It's pretty haunting looking stuff there.
It's like of that the reading age where it's like you can still read it as an adult and you know, enjoy it.
Absolutely.
But it's not too young, you know. I guess it would be considered young adult now.
And the thing about running across these passage, it wasn't like I sat down and read it cover to cover, because I'm a slow, tedious reader. But I had this one at the bedside. I'd brought it home a couple weeks ago from the studio. Sam gave it to me, and I just picked it up and flipped through it, and it was one of those exhibits of psychometry where the page just kind of fell open to the right spot, and Tallahatchie County, Mississippi jumped out at me. So I had to try to read a little context into that. Fascinating tale, anyway. How does that play into what we're looking at here? Are Mississippi ghosts? Well, I don't know. Maybe just the overriding theme of someone put to death for a crime they did not commit, in this case, an African American, does parallel, in a sense, stories that we've heard about the Helen Clevenger murder at Battery Park Hotel, that Martin Moore, who went to the gas chamber in 1936 for the murder of a young New York co-ed who was staying at the Battery Park Hotel in downtown Asheville. Martin Moore said before he went to the gas chamber that his confession had been coerced. There were blood stains on the confession. Some people went so far, his defense attorney went so far as to say that he was beaten with rubber hoses. And, you know, the confession was coerced. I will say this, if Martin Moore was not guilty, he was outright framed, scapegoated, because they had evidence at the trial that it was either completely fabricated, planted evidence, which I'm not saying that sort of thing didn't go on. Maybe they were covering up for someone, and they thought the easiest way to do it was to scapegoat some young man who had no recourse. I've actually been in touch with one of Martin Moore's nieces, and she said that in the family, ever since, to the man, the relatives have proclaimed Martin Moore's innocence, that they gassed an innocent man for the murder of Helen Clevenger. So maybe just to get in my head again, because I've wandered those halls. I've thought a lot about it. So even though it's coming from a totally different place, maybe it's Martin Moore trying to send me a message that this is my story. This is very much the situation I found myself in. And a few years ago, some of our colleagues were talking about, writing a story about the Helen Clevenger murder and potentially the wrongful accusation of Martin Moore, and then going to the gas chamber. That's tragic stuff right there. A good friend of ours has been in the Battery Park Hotel conducting paranormal experiments in recent months, and I need to get with this good friend of ours. I'll say it is David Voiles, because I've offered to David to get him in the studio sometimes. He was a professor of Joshua P. Warren mm-hmm. back in the day, and now he has Dark Ride Hearse Tours. If you'll check out Dark Ride Tours here in Asheville, a great looking 72 Cadillac hearse restored, and you can ride around in the hearse with David. As Virgil Nightshade, character, Virgil Nightshade, and Dark Ride Tours. But anyway, he has been back in the Battery Park Hotel in recent months, and I don't think he'll mind me saying just that much until we can arrange to get him in the studio one of these weeks, because I think he would be a very fascinating interview, and he's a sharp guy, and I always enjoy a nice chat with David. And he comes highly recommended when you taught Joshua P. Warren everything he knows about literature. Of course, he had a part in inspiring it. They say every great writer had great teachers and inspirations, and I suppose that's true. So we'll take a closer look at swirling synchronicity in the goings-on of Speaking of Strange.
The Police album?
That's a good one. Maybe we should pull a bumper from that. Anyway, it's Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. It's Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. And I might just throw out there as an aside that Joshua P. Warren has set foot back in the Carolinas, but he's still on the move. So it may be a couple weeks before we get to reunite with him and sit down for one of those all-night chats that I miss so much. Yeah, he's a busy man, but you can keep track of him at joshuapwarren.com. Is there a period after the P, guys?
No.
joshuapwarren.com. Yeah, I got an email from him the other day, said, I'm in North Carolina, but I got to run off again and do some production work out west, and then I'll be back and we'll catch up. So I'm going to hold him to it. It'll be good to see Joshua P. Warren's return live to the studio. Been a long time since Josh has sat down in a chair here in the 570 studios, hasn't it?
Almost a year?
Yeah, probably so.
Okay. Let's try and pick up where I left off. It's a bit heady, but I think we can make it conversational. We can make it fun. And I found a couple articles that I think discuss the phenomena in a fascinating and entertaining way. So I might pull a couple of citations from some reputable articles here. Have you heard of apophenia, Shelley?
I don't think I have.
Pareidolia.
Heard of that.
Pareidolia is when I always forget the term, so I always just refer to it as cloud gazing. That is seeing shapes in clouds, which is one example of pareidolia, but I need to make that word part of my regular paranormal vocabulary. Pareidolia, is it assigning too much significance to something resembling something else? But then there's apophenia, which is a bit of a broader term. It's the spontaneous perception of connections and meaningfulness of unrelated phenomena. That's a bit wordy. So let's see. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary says apophenia is the tendency to perceive a connection of or meaningful pattern between unrelated or random things. Apophenia. And then more specifically, pareidolia. Pareidolia, seeing faces in unusual places, is the headline of this article from a few years back on Live Science. To some observers, it looked like an ordinary grilled cheese sandwich, but to the Miami woman who put it up for sale on eBay, and to some people who viewed it, there was an image of the Virgin Mary seared on this seemingly run-of-the-mill snack. You've heard these stories. The psychological phenomenon that causes some people to see or hear a vague or random image or sound as something significant is known as pareidolia. It goes into the etymology, the roots, origins, meaning of the word. Famous examples of pareidolia, a prime example of pareidolia and its connection to religious images is, of course, the Shroud of Turin, a cloth bearing the image of a man, which some believe to be Jesus, who appears to have suffered trauma consistent with crucifixion. The negative image was first observed in 1898 by a photographer who was allowed to shoot the shroud while it was being exhibited in the Turin Cathedral. Some visitors to St. Mary's and Rathkell, Ireland, say that a tree stump outside of the church bears a silhouette of the Virgin Mary. There was another interesting example. Oh, a cinnamon bun bearing a likeness of Mother Teresa was first discovered at the Bongo Java Cafe in Belmont, Tennessee, and it was on display for about 10 years until it was stolen on Christmas Day in 2007.
Aww.
Who steals the Mother Teresa cinnamon roll from Bongo Java?
Somebody who was hungry for a cinnamon roll.
A very old,
remember that Carson
cinnamon
where
roll.
He had the lady on with the potato chips that were shaped like and that was like her life's thing was collecting the potato chips.
Yes.
And he had like a regular Lay's potato chip, and then he's like, can I see that? And he sleight of handed her and ate the potato, and she's like, no.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I did a story actually this week on my show on the other station about this Pennsylvania couple who say they saw a religious sign in their baby's sonogram just days before giving birth. They went in for an ultrasound ahead of the birth of their baby girl, and what they saw was unbelievable. The guy's name, which is Miss, it's on the Fox website, so it's Miss, they call him Zeke, but it's Zach. He says, "This is distinct. There's a face looking at my daughter, and it's the face of Christ." What do you think? The face of Christ, or just a weird blurb in an ultrasound? There's the baby's head. That would be a tiny Christ.
It's looking more like 1974 era Jeff Lynne.
Okay.
Staring at the baby.
Jeff Lynne Skunk Baxter, perhaps?
ELO. Yeah. Electric Light Orchestra.
Oh, okay. I see the sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah. Serenading your baby in the womb. That's not too bad. Was the wife a ELO fan? That's my question.
We'll have to
reach
out.
It looks more like Jeff Lynne than Jesus.
Well,
one and the same.
Fair
I don't
enough.
Know. I don't want to go.
He is a Hall of Famer.
He's a pretty important guy. He was one of the Traveling Wilburys. You know, he's that other guy from the Traveling Wilburys.
He produced John Lennon's posthumous album.
He's an impressive composer.
And he wore dark sunglasses
yes,
all the time.
Yes, he did. Roy Orbison as well.
He had an eye issue, didn't he?
Did Roy or Jeff Lynne or both?
Roy, I think, had like a...
Possibly.
Something like brightness.
But here's pareidolia pulled straight back into paranormal with this citation. There are a number of theories as to the cause of this phenomenon. Experts say pareidolia provides a psychological determination for many delusions that involve the senses. They believe pareidolia could be behind numerous sightings of UFOs, Elvis, and the Loch Ness Monster, and the hearing of disturbing messages on records when they are played backwards.
Mm.
I'll leave that so I don't end up just reading. I encourage you to look that one up on your own because it's a fascinating article.
I kid you not. Growing up, we had to go to a lot of these like lectures and stuff at my grandpa's college, where they would have these backmasking lectures. And for some reason, two songs that are like stuck in my head that they were like, "Now you can clearly hear Satan at work." One was Karma Chameleon, and one was a track by Alabama. And I'm like, as I've gotten older, I'm like, really? Alabama? Like, those are the two you're going to...
Culture Club and Alabama.
Yeah, I was like, now listen close. And I have it on vinyl. Actually, I have the sermon on vinyl at Dad's house.
Well, wow.
He has it on vinyl.
But... So what happens when you play the sermon backwards?
Oh, Frank Garlock. What's
no.
Man, I never took it that far. We're going to have to... Dad, if you're listening...
That's so
bring
meta.
Bring the vinyl down.
And that's so meta. I remember I had a couple of books called What the Devil is Wrong with Rock Music.
I've got a bunch of those.
Yeah, and they talked about some things that were wrong with rock music. Specifically, the way they transcribed a portion of Stairway to Heaven, the classic Led Zeppelin track, they transcribed that backwards as something that I didn't hear at all. What I heard in that place was, "There's no mistaking, he's my sweet Satan." But, I mean, which is, again, is it pareidolia? Is it apophenia?
I think this is like a famous one, was the Queen, Another One Bites the Dust. When played in reverse, it supposedly contains the message,
"It's all right to smoke marijuana."
Something. It's fun to smoke marijuana.
Okay.
Let's see if we can hear it. Here we go. What happened?
Another one busts the dust.
Okay, here's the normal. Here's the normal version.
Another one busts the dust. Hey, hey. Another one busts the dust.
Now backwards. I mean, I think
it's smoke marijuana.
I think it's pretty cut and dry there, Vance. I mean,
yeah,
I think Queen was encouraging the youth to light them up and smoke them doobers.
Maybe not a stretch. All these years later, the truth
paradoxia
comes out. Pareidolia.
Oh, sorry.
Pareidolia. Dolia. This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. Is it all in your head or is it real? We'll be right back. In them thar hills, so says I. I'm Vance Pollock. It's Speaking of Strange. That's our buddy Stevie Tombstone. He knows how to channel the darkness a little bit. He's been there and lived to tell, and that's his tune, Carolina, sure enough. There were like a couple live clips of him doing that, but we discovered when I brought in a flawed MP3 to use on a past show that... it wasn't on YouTube. I had to remedy that. No offense, Stevie. I'm not raking in any money on your behalf. Next time I see you out at Root Bar, I'll tip you. Okay. I'm reading some books these days, guys. I'm back in the library, so I see a lot of stuff, and I just can't resist. A fellow came into the South Buncombe Library, a couple of months back, and had me... put in a hold request for him. You'll see now that South Buncombe Library actually owns a copy of it. That's a little trick. If you look in the back of the book, there's a sticker that tells you which library it belongs to. SBUN is the South Buncombe, the Skyland Library. They got a copy of Annie Jacobson's new book, Phenomena, The Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. This is no bull. This is the real deal. There were high ups in government and military that thought it might be possible to pin down some of these sixth senses or some of this psychic ability, remote viewing, all these sorts of things. And there was much research in the wake of World War II, and some say still going on to this day, into extrasensory perception specifically, and the paranormal in general. You may have noticed, because I've mentioned it a couple of times, I used it as an example of what I call trigger noticing. I think this kind of falls in line with, was it apophenia? I've already forgotten one of those words. Pareidolia and apophenia.
Apollonia.
Oh, okay. Is this kind of an apophenia theme that I suggested? There's a memory cue called, something you can do to improve your memory called trigger noticing, where you sort of meditate on a given theme, subject, or something as simple as a number, and then you try to see how many times you notice it. Sam, I think a couple weeks ago we were discussing how many billions of bits of information the human mind processes every day, just on an average day, billions pieces of information. So if you parse that information, if you had total observational, like, I don't know what sort of Rain Man ability it would take to process and index, categorize every bit of information that you took in a day, you would probably see patterns everywhere.
Well, I mean, I think some people do, maybe autistic people or Asperger's or certain types of illnesses or medical things, or some people whose brains are just wired somewhat differently. I mean, how much do you think you process, or like how much do you retain a day?
I've tried to become a pretty careful observer, I'll put it that way. And I've got
expense of like things that you should notice, like you're like, I have carefully observed this minute detail, but then you can't find your car keys.
Yeah. Probably so, at the expense of more ordinary things. Like, I'm so caught up in the
details.
If
you were to
walk
into my house, like it could look cluttered, but like amidst the clutter, I know right where my tiny screwdriver is, you know, like that I need for this guitar. But I note all sorts of like where this is or where that is. But then like when it's something that I actually need, information that needs to be retained, no chance.
Sure.
Like, where do I have to be at work? I don't know.
Well, in my case, I might have to dig in the clutter for a particular book for half an hour or more. I may not even find it. It may be next week when I run across it. But if I could actually get my hands on that book, I could tell you what page, which paragraph, and I could almost quote.
What page?
I could almost quote the paragraph, from memory. But here, I'm reading this Annie Jacobson, not entire books, but if it's something that I liked and I read twice and said, okay, Vance, remember this. From Annie Jacobson's book, Phenomena, The Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis, I read something that really struck a chord with me, and then it got even more personal. Before I even noticed that it was on page 33, of course, that's not very far along in the book. I'm a slow reader, but I think I used the number 3 as your example for trigger noticing. Look out for the number 3. So on page 33 of Phenomena, I'm reading, Jack Hammond, like Nikola Tesla before him, believed scientific inspiration could come to a man from an unknown energy force in the form of a dream. There was precedent for this idea, including personal accounts from 2 Nobel laureates and a founding father of modern organic chemistry, August Kekulé. We'll say August Kekulé. It's kind of a strange-looking name. At a science symposium in Germany in 1890, Kekulé, who discovered benzene, revealed that the idea had come to him in a dream in which he imagined a snake eating its own tail, like the ancient symbol of the Ouroboros. Have we talked about the Ouroboros a little bit lately? My son Jesse was there in the room with me in Iceland a month or so back and just blurted out Ouroboros boys for no particular reason while I was holding that pamphlet in my hand from 1947 with the snake swallowing its tail on the cover. And I'm sure he didn't see that, and I think if he had seen it, he wouldn't have known it was the Ouroboros. The only reason he had any context for that word was the surf rock band from Asheville that he had heard me talk about, Ouroboros Boys. But anyway, he says Ouroboros Boys, and I'm looking at that, and I get this weird shiver, and the hair stands up on the back of my neck, and I'm like, where did that come from? Where did that come from, Jesse? Oh, I don't know. Just popped in my head. But then the idea of inspiration coming to you in dreams, I like that a little bit. Shelley, when you and I have been out in the graveyards and on the mountainside just trying to channel some of these old energies, sometimes it's like I get some hunches, I get some readings on things, but I really don't know what to do with it. We're hunting ghosts. We're trying to find out who's the personality behind this supposed haunting. Go home and after a night's sleep, wake up with a cue or a hint or something that leads right back to them.
It's like something whispered in your ear.
Yeah, I don't have total recall of my dreams. How about you guys? Shelley, do you remember your dreams?
I dream so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have so many vivid dreams every single night that if I think, okay, I'm gonna remember this, then I could, and I just write pages and pages. But I know a lot of people aren't like that.
Don't keep a dream journal by the bedside. That's
no.
A habit that I've always thought I needed to do this because I'll get really vivid, very distinct impressions from dreams sometimes. And wake up, and I'll know, and I'll think them over and over in my head, like I need to remember that, and the next day it's gone.
Well, I have written down numbers. Over the last couple of months, there was a series of numbers.
Lucky line.
I thought so. I thought so. I was ready. I told Mom we're going to go on a really nice trip somewhere. We did not win. I did not win. I played those numbers. Yeah, it didn't mean anything. So... Oh, well.
I rarely dream or, like, recall dreaming enough to even, like, you know, write anything down. But occasionally I have woke up and immediately Googled something and then, like, gone back to sleep. So then the next day, whatever I had Googled from the dream would still be in my phone browser. So I'd be like, oh, giant wave snake or something, you know.
Okay.
And so that way, that was my way of remembering, not like a dream journal, but then like it would tell me like if I was dreaming of huge waves, that means like you're feeling overwhelmed by life or something. You can Google pretty much anything, like green snake with blue eyes chasing me, and it'll somebody's put like, you know, dream interpretation
right
on there.
Well, the interesting thing about some of my dream recall is that there'll be very specific lines of poetry or lyrics that don't exist because I'll write them down and I'm like, wow, that's profound, that's really deep, and it's just a few words, not necessarily an entire haiku, but something that sounds like a bit of lyric or poetry, and I will write those down occasionally. So I've got these strange scraps of paper with pencil scratching in the dark next to the bed, and I've looked some of those bits up online with no results whatsoever. So maybe there is some sort of artistic or creative inspiration coming through. Maybe I need to start writing more dream poetry. Strange things
yeah,
go on.
You probably should.
Strange things yeah. go on inside the mind. Would you let me read some dream poetry?
Only maybe if it was in haiku form.
We could get Josh to come in and play some Native American flute.
Only if he was in a kimono reading the haikus.
It's Joshua P. Warren. Speaking of strange, I'm Vance Pollock. I'm in the studio with Shelley Wright and Sam the Animal Steele, and we'll be right back to finish out this hour.
A great big long shotgun. top of the barrel, upside her head. I said, release me. Hey, that woman, release me. Or I'll blow the moonlight clean through your bald head.
Wow, I'm walking sideways. Screaming Jay on Speaking of Strange. Don't get much better than that. Unfortunately. I'm Vance Pollock, and we've been talking a little bit about tricks the mind plays, and maybe there's a little more to it than that. So I sometimes feel like I'm feeding into the pareidolia, the apophenia, to the point that I'm making myself a little bit neurotic. I'm becoming a little bit paranoid. I have seen way too many of these things, and I'm trying to see signs in all of this coincidence, quote unquote, synchronicity, and it makes me wary. Like, I'll get in the car and I'm like super cautious because it's one of those mornings where I've been seeing a lot of this stuff and I'm like, okay, is it a sign to watch your back or be careful? But generally they're not really foreboding signs. I don't really get a sense of dread when I see these, but what if your psychological temperament was such that you saw these coincidences or these recurrent themes, these synchronicities, serendipity, and it was like a harbinger of doom?
Well, I mean, there's been plenty of movies, I think, about that topic, and typically when you're that person, everybody else doesn't believe you, and you come off as looking crazy, like you with your little scraps of paper. Your post-it notes all over the place. I'm sure your wife loves that. Post-it note. You're like, no, honey, it means something. It means something.
Right. But there was something else that I didn't expound on. Out of the dark 30 over here on page 22, reading again from the dark 30, I'm just going to reinforce what a 19th century poet and editor named William Cullen Bryant gave as a warning to all those who would make a mockery of justice. That's in the words of Patricia C. McKissick in The Dark 30, the chapter on justice. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. That's a pretty obscure quote. The weird thing is, it hasn't been more than a couple weeks since I was Googling that quote and specifically looking for it in the context of the only time I had ever seen it on the base of the Confederate monument in Carrollton, Mississippi, the county seat of Carroll County, Mississippi, right next to Tallahatchie County, right down in that pocket we're talking where the Mississippi ghosts come from. So I'm telling you that just a couple weeks ago, I got this quote, truth crushed to earth will rise again, stuck in my head, and had to go research it. Spent, you know, half an hour or so poring over it. And specifically, there were blogs talking about its use on the Confederate monument.
It seems odd to be in Carroll County, Confederate monument.
Because that poet is a Northern poet. Well, and that quote is completely out of context.
Yeah, I was going to say it seems out of context.
Yeah.
The rise again part, Confederate, but like everything else about it seems not right.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about it, in this instance, it's being used by an African-American author as, you know, to vindicate someone who has been wrongfully accused and lynched. And there it is on the Confederate monument. It in a way, this sort of addresses both sides of the current flap over some of these statues and monuments. is that truth is sort of in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
I kind of like that one from the end of JFK. I guess it's attributed to Jim Garrison. Let justice be done, though the heavens fall.
Deep stuff.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because Speaking of Strange is a very, very deep, poetic, literate sort of show. It can be. The what is it? The summit of man's wisdom to the pit of his dark depravity. Yeah, the summit of man's wisdom suggests that truth crushed to earth will rise again. And a northern poet by the name of William Cullen Bryant penned those words. And yet, down there in Mississippi, in Carroll County, they're on the Confederate monument. Quite peculiar. Quite interesting. I'm Vance Pollock on Joshua P. Warren Speaking of Strange with Shelley and Sam. And we'll be back after the top of the hour.